Get ready for Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Listen in as Doug and Amy provide helpful tips on how to get ready for anything that comes your way. And now, your hosts, Doug and Amy.
Hi, everybody. This is Amy. I'm here with Doug today, and you are listening to Ready Radio. We are still a fairly new radio show, and for all of you who are listening, I just want to give you a little tidbit of what you can expect today, but also sort of an overview, sort of umbrella, I guess, if you will, of what we do and sort of our passion and what this hour is basically here for you. So today we're going to be talking about hurricanes and natural disaster types of things. And Doug's with me today. Doug, can you give us sort of a little brief overview of kind of what Ready Radio is kind of all about?
Well, Amy, as you well know, Ready Radio is an attempt for us to reach every person in our listening audience with information that they can use to be better prepared, not only for what's going on in their lives today, but for what may happen in the future. And as such, we try to focus on topics including things like EMPs or even fun topics like zombies, as long as it gives us an example that we can use so that people can see what we're trying to promote, which is being ready for the future.
Exactly. Yep. And today we are going to take a peek into some of the past, really sort of digging into some of the history books and just kind of seeing what has happened in the past. Because let me tell you, Doug, it's real important that we learn from what's happened, because rubbing my magic ball, I can kind of look into the future and see that we're not finished with hurricanes and tornadoes and natural disasters of all sorts. So
that's very true. And of course, this is a very topical subject, because we've had that tropical typhoon that hit the Philippines this last week, and it's the 1 year anniversary for Hurricane Sandy. So we've seen a lot of destruction recently. You don't have to go back that far in the past to remember what happened with the most economically destructive hurricane in history, which was Katrina. And within the last 30 years, we've had the most life-threatening hurricane that has ever hit, when a tropical cyclone hit Bangladesh and killed what amounts to the entire population of the city of Atlanta.
Yeah, there's some pretty rough stuff. And it's, you know, Doug, it's one thing, too, when you're watching the news and you see sort of this stuff, I don't know, when you see families that are clinging to their children and just begging for help, and it really is heartbreaking. And, you know, to look at this typhoon that did recently hit, I was doing a little research and kind of looking into that, and it said that it was really about 3.5 times more forceful than Hurricane Katrina. And this was a horrible storm. They're talking now that they're estimating a good 10,000 people may have died, because they still haven't gotten into the areas that are unreachable still at this point. So it is a massive storm.
It really is a tragedy. And our thoughts and prayers go out to all of the families and all of those affected by this horrible disaster. And brings us back home to talking about being ready. You know, as we look at what can happen, there are things in nature that are just awe-inspiring. This storm had sustained winds of over 195 miles an hour. I've been in winds where it's been 60 and 70 mile an hour gusts, and I know what that's like. I cannot fathom what 195 mm-hmm. mile an hour wind is like. I mean, it would be like being in a small airplane with no window in front of you, just having that force blow in all the time. Couple that with the storm surge, I have seen reports of bodies hanging in trees and just the utter devastation. The tragedy is that this was a truly massive storm. I mean, the size of the storm was, my last information was 1,750 miles across. Mm-hmm. That's the equivalent of the entire western half of the lower 48 states. If you think about one storm that would reach all the way from Los Angeles to the middle of Missouri, that was this storm. And it barreled through right over one of the most populated areas in the Philippines. And then mm-hmm. on, the devastation there is just tragic.
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, if you think about just all the buildings, the homes, the grocery stores, everything are just leveled. And the survivors that are left just kind of standing in the rubble looking around, I mean, you really truly do have to rely on others. You can't just run down to your local grocery store. I mean, things are obliterated, and what do?
One of the scarier statistics I ran across in preparing for today's show was the amount of aid that the United States requested after Hurricane Katrina. Did you know that the U.S. approached the European Union and said that we don't have enough medical kits, we don't have enough blankets, we need help?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a really, if you think about, everyone says, well, you know, after a disaster, the government needs to step in. The government wasn't ready for that either. Nobody was.
Right. Yeah, and that's the thing, too. I mean, you know, when you kind of think about the amount of people who need help and then the amount of people who are able to help, when you have such a huge scenario with such a large amount of people who are needing help, I mean, it's, you just do the math. I mean, there are people that are going to have to wait around, and it may take some time, if at all. I mean, I know that right now, in the Philippines, that they have, their hospitals are just overflowing, and they are turning people away. There are people who are injured who just can't get medical help.
Well, they have to perform triage. You got to take the worst first, and everyone else has got to wait in line. And in some cases, you're turning away people with, you know, significant but not life-threatening injuries to deal with all those who are life-threatening. And then the sadder turn events is when they turn around people who have life-threatening injuries because they know that they can't help them, and it's a waste of resources to try.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. One of the things that I have, it's really struck home with me, and Doug, and I'll confess, a little confession here, I'm not that great when it comes to first aid. I mean, I can put a Band-Aid on like nobody's business. But as far as if I had to, suture my child up because she's bleeding or something, I think I would probably pass out.
And I don't blame you on that. I have a hard time dealing with medical issues myself. I'm fortunate because my wife is a medical professional, so I can rely on her to take care of things like that. But this is one of those basic skill sets that we've been preaching about for mm-hmm. a long time, that you need to know how to take care of things on your own.
Yes.
And I know that, you know, our sponsors over at True Prep do a good job of having a large variety of medical supplies in their store, and they're looking into having classes where they will be teaching people the skills they need to use everything that they have available. But as we, you know, get ready for what's coming next or what could happen here, that's a skill set that cannot be ignored.
It really is. And you made a good point too, Doug, that you said that you have someone in your family who is skilled in that way. But what if it happened that she was actually the one that needed the help? That's why I think it is so important that we take these classes, even if it's a basic first aid class, anything up to if someone were to have a broken arm or needed sutures or something like that. It's important that yes, it's excellent to have someone in the family that is trained in the medical field, but gosh, what happens if they're the one that actually needs it?
Yeah, and there are some eventualities that just require cross-training. And as we get further into the survival topics that we're going to discuss over the next few weeks, we're going to see that kind of cross-training so that everyone is able to fill in for someone else in your family is an incredibly crucial part of preparedness planning.
Yeah, that's true. And let me tell you, there's some great stuff online. You mentioned our sponsors, True Prep. They've got excellent things. So much more than just walking into, I guess, your typical Walmart and getting some Band-Aids. I know they have an extensive line. But something, Doug, I saw on I think it was YouTube or something the other day. It was really interesting. Just a roll of duct tape. It's amazing what you can do with a roll of duct tape when it comes to first aid. I actually saw how to make a stretcher out of two large sticks, and the way that they cross the duct tape across to make a stretcher to pull someone out.
I've always said, Amy, if you can't fix it with duct tape, you're not using enough duct tape.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, so that's a great thing, I think, to... Gosh, let me tell you, if you just kind of Google search duct tape and preparedness, it's amazing what comes up.
If you just Google search duct tape, it's amazing what's come up. I know that yes. A lot of state fairs now have a duct tape contest where they have entire outfits made out of duct tape.
And I've seen some of that, yeah.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I've actually seen the prom duct tape outfits, which was pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's coming up next is we need to have paracord contests like that, where
yes.
you make your entire outfit out of 138 colors of paracord.
I think you're right.
But getting back to the hurricane issue and topic, there's a lot of things that we can do to be ready. Hurricanes are a tremendous force of nature. I mean, when you look at the size of these storms and their it's a yearly reoccurring threat to people who live on the coast. And you think, oh, you know, I don't live that close to the coast, and I don't live down in Florida. It's not a big deal for me. And then we have Sandy to remind us all that New York is on the coast, mm-hmm. and it's yeah. just as likely to get a hurricane as anywhere, really, because of the way the winds work. It can get all the way up to New York without any problem. It looks like we're coming up on a commercial break, folks, and I really appreciate all of you tuning in. You're listening to News Talk 1160, The Talk of the Town, with Ready Radio with Amy and Doug today.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
We're talking hurricanes today and other tropical storms, cyclones, depressions, and anything that can come in from the seaward side to cause havoc with your day. We've touched a little bit briefly on the effects of this most recent tropical storm that hit in the Philippines, and we've been thinking back to Hurricane Sandy and Katrina, but those are just the most recent and most memorable ones that have been in the last few years. The history of the hurricanes on the eastern seaboard is vast, and I know Amy has done quite a bit of research as to the most interesting hurricanes that have hit. Amy, what are the highlights? What storms should we remember?
Well, I think, you know, we all remember, of course, Hurricane Katrina that we talked a little bit and touched a little bit about earlier. And of course, New Orleans was the most heavily hit. We all remember seeing the pictures on the news and people standing on their roofs and looking for help.
The pictures I remember most are the looting of Walmart. I remember there was a picture of a young man riding a bicycle that still had tags on it, holding what I sincerely hope was a BB gun, as he rode through Walmart as it was completely ransacked and everything was gone. And that has stuck out in my mind ever since.
Yes. And it's amazing, Doug, that not only that, but there were carjacking, there was murders, thefts, and rapes. I mean, I don't understand why just because of a storm that it would, you know, imply that more people would just lose their minds, I guess.
Well, this is really interesting because I was talking to a gentleman who is a first responder this last week, and he was telling me about the time he spent in Japan following the Fukushima disaster. And what he told me was that even though the storm had hit and the plant had basically melted down and all of the windows were blown out for miles in all the stores, the only thing that you saw was caution tape put up around the windows. Nobody stole anything. There was a completely different mindset in Japan than there is in New Orleans when this happened. And it's a sad commentary on our culture when we look at all of these disasters and how frequently looting breaks out. Now, I'm not saying that that happens in every single instance, because we all know that there are times when the community comes together and you see people pull together and really support each other through a disaster, through a tornado or a hurricane or something else. But unfortunately, we see all too often that society, our society, turns to violence and turns to looting and sees an opportunity there that other people eschew.
Yes. Yeah, I can kind of understand, you know, with my children, if I see them hungry and they're crying because their stomach hurts so bad because they're hungry or they're thirsty. And I mean, I can honestly see myself, you know, throwing a rock through a Walmart to get something to, you know, to feed my child. I can see myself doing that. But I can't really see carjacking, you know, or maybe, you know.
I'll pardon you like I would Jean Valjean, but when you see people carting off big screen TVs that have been soaked.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not even worth anything.
Right.
They've been soaked.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the idea that they're going to take something.
Yeah.
That's one of the mindsets that we need to overcome.
Yeah, and that's the thing. When you're looking at emergency preparedness, one of the things is, you know, I just don't want to subject myself and my family to the looting and the rioting, and so I'm going to try my best. I'm I'm hoping and praying that my home is going to be intact. And if I can stay in my home as long as I can and just kind of bunker down as long as it takes and just take care of my family with from within and not have to venture out to find things to sustain us, that's really my ultimate goal.
Katrina had some other interesting fallout. Not just was it localized in the states where it was hit, but it had wide-reaching effect on other states. I was living in Atlanta the year that Katrina hit, and I remember distinctly the gas lines because all of the refineries shut down along the Gulf Coast, and that was a ripple effect all the way over here. Even though we didn't have any direct effects from the storm itself, we didn't have storm surge, we didn't have high winds, but that caused people to be out in the streets. I remember distinctly standing in a Kroger parking lot pushing a grocery cart full of 5-gallon gas cans because I didn't want to leave my car idling for the 4 hours it took to get up to the pump.
That's right.
And I don't want to have to go through that experience again ever.
Yeah. Oh, well, I don't blame you. Yeah, I was reading actually that Georgia, that it was the destination of more than 100,000 evacuees.
Yeah, I remember when they were here, and I remember them getting those cards. They had cards to pay for food and shelter while they were here, and then the cards were getting turned off, and everyone was wondering, what are they going to do? Are you going back to New Orleans? Well, New Orleans hasn't even been rebuilt yet, and where are you supposed to stay?
Right, you know, and I wouldn't doubt at all if some of our listeners actually are here in Atlanta, you know, from Louisiana and just stayed, because we do have quite a few people. I've met some that have moved on over and just decided to hang out and stay here with us.
I think it's very interesting that you use the word evacuees when I think in most other contexts we would call them refugees. When you look at other places, we think of them in those terms, that they've been completely displaced either from war or famine or a natural disaster. But in the U.S., we tend to isolate ourselves and insulate ourselves from those kinds of terms. We don't have refugees in the U.S., but Katrina created refugees.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other hurricanes that have had major impact on the U.S.?
Well, of course, I remember Hurricane Sandy when that came through, and that was, of course, pretty devastating. I'm sure that all of our listeners, you know, when, just in our conversation, I'm sure all of this is bringing up, you know, the images of you know, when all this happened. But that wasn't that long ago, just October of last year. And
yes, Sandy is kind of an anomaly for me because where I was living at the time, I was isolated from it. I didn't get a lot of news, and I wasn't really aware of what was going on. I know that it affected probably more people than any other hurricane besides Katrina. I know that because it hit in the New York area that there was a huge displacement there. But what are some of the facts about Sandy that you remember?
Hurricane Sandy actually came through and really affected, you know, at least 7 countries coming through. And the numbers that I came up with, just kind of digging around, I found that about 286 people were killed. Of course, it's just devastating damages, about $68 billion in damage throughout, you know, 7 countries as it swept through. And actually, the Hurricane Sandy affected 24 states. You know, not just, of course, we remember New York, and I have friends, personal friends in New York, and just remember hearing stories from them personally. But one of the things I guess I didn't really realize that was that it affected 24 of the states.
And how did it affect them? Was this power outages or was it, you know, supply chain disruption? I remember hearing that it was over $200 million in lost revenue alone for the canceled airline flights that would have gone in and out of the region.
Yeah, there's a lot of things we don't really take in consideration, and that's absolutely one of them. Yeah, so really when I think of damage, I'm thinking of, you know, buildings that are you know, the visual things, the buildings that are damaged or things along those lines.
Subways underwater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. But yes, when you do look at the revenue lost and people out of work and things like that, yeah, that does tend to add up pretty fast.
An enormous economic impact from every storm is, I mean, it's really shocking when you think about the fallout across the region, not just the localized. I mean, because it's easy to think, well, you know, I don't live on the coast. I mean, that's one of the things I hear all the time. Well, you know, we're in Atlanta or we're in Utah or wherever we are. we don't live next to the coast. Well, that's great, but it's still going to impact you. It's going to impact fuel supplies. It's going to impact electricity generation. It's going to impact a lot of things. And so that's one of the things that you need to take into consideration, is that these events, even when they're half a world away, still have an impact on your daily life.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it was really kind of odd when I was reading. I mean, I remember the big baby boom and everything when that happened, but they were actually saying that there was a post-Sandy baby boom that happened. And I just kind of found that kind of interesting. You know, yeah. When you look at a lot of the different, you know, disaster scenarios, and all of a sudden there's a big baby boom.
Well, you know, that just goes to show you that you need to have some board games and something else to do when the power goes off.
Sure.
As part of your preparations.
Yeah, absolutely. Gives you something to do, though, I suppose.
What are some other hurricanes besides Sandy and Katrina? Some of the ones that come to my mind were Ike. There were some very large storms that have hit in my lifetime in Florida. I used to live in Florida for a little while, and I remember going to the Eckerd's pharmacies to get the hurricane trackers so you could watch them come in. Did you know that there's two main kinds of hurricanes that affect the eastern seaboard? The first is what's called the Cape Verde hurricane, and that comes from the eastern coast of Africa, builds strength across the vast distance of the Atlantic, and then pummels into the Caribbean and the eastern seaboard. But there's also a short form called the Bahama Buster that comes in roaring straight over the Caribbean and gains its strength very quickly and has a lot less lead time than the Cape Verde style.
So what's the difference between, like, your lead time with the two?
Well, the Cape Verde style will start as a tropical storm, and you'll have typically several weeks' worth of notice. However, the Bahamas Busters can form in as little as a week and be on your doorstep in a few days.
Yeah, that's the one thing. You know, there are certain things that you really don't have any warning at all, but this is one thing, you know, with your TV, watching the news, you definitely are able to kind of see that heading your way. So that's a good thing.
We're rolling up on another commercial break. I appreciate everyone tuning in to us. You are listening to News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
Here comes the story of the hurricane. The man the authorities came to blame for something that he never done. Put in a prison cell, but one time he could have been the champion.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
You're listening to Ready Radio. We're back. You've got Doug and Amy here talking about hurricanes, natural disasters, and what you can do to be better prepared. We just finished up the last segment looking back at some of the big storms that have hit the U.S. following, you know, Hurricane Katrina and the forced evacuations there, the damage following Hurricane Sandy and all of the people in the Northeast who suffered from that, and apparently in 24 different states had effects from it, and of course the newest typhoon and the just devastation we've all seen in the Philippines. So now we need to talk about what can we do to be better prepared for this kind of a natural disaster. And Amy, I know that you've got a list that we should be implementing in our homes when we hear a hurricane is on the way.
Yes, well, there's quite a few things. I mean, first of all, if you imagine that you're not going to hop in your car and buzz out to get what you need during a time like this, there's quite a few things. And just kind of looking a little bit at our needs kind of one by one.
Evacuation is a good point. I mean, a lot of people choose that option. They do the best they can. They board up their windows. They put their loved ones and their pets in a car, and they head for the road. And the beautiful thing about a hurricane, if there is a saving grace, is that we have enough lead time that most people can evacuate. I've driven, you know, the coastal highways, and I've seen the big demarcations that come down to block off the roads so that you can turn all of the roads into a one-way direction to be able to get as many people out as possible. But when you deal with large coastal cities like Savannah or Jacksonville or Miami, particularly when you get to the southern end of Florida, how far do you have to go to escape? And what's the next major city that these people are going to be going to get away from the storm? It's probably Atlanta, Birmingham, maybe someplace a little bit further west on the Gulf Coast. But we are, you know, an evacuation center here in Atlanta.
Yeah, that's true. And as we've seen in the past, you know, Atlanta has been affected, you know, also, of course, not near as bad as the other ones. But yes, I mean, we can be affected in our own backyards.
So this is another reason that we need to be cognizant of the hurricanes coming. Not only the people on the coast, but also us who are going to be affected in, you know, secondary ways. Now, let's say that there are some people who don't live right on the coast, so that they are going to have some of the storm effects, but not necessarily the full brunt of it like you would expect for an evacuation situation. What sort of things can you do to help harden your home for a major storm, whether it be a tropical storm or a hurricane that turns into a tropical storm as it loses oomph going over land, or just a massive thunderstorm?
Yeah, I know a lot of people, you know, rush out to the hardware stores and you know, generators tend to go pretty quickly, and tarps tend to go pretty quickly, and things along those lines. And, you know, you kind of go to the whole, almost feels like Black Friday shopping sometimes when you're out there, you know, pushing elbows and trying to get what's left on the shelves. So that's why it's good to sort of learn from the past and get these kind of things ahead of time before there is, you know, the possibility of something like this heading our way.
Having a small supply on hand in your garage of plywood to board up major windows, having a collection of tarps, having bungee cords, having nails, having screws, having duct tape, having what other sort of hardware supplies would you recommend having?
Did you mention generators?
I did not.
Oh, yeah. You know, one thing too, Doug, that I've been doing a little bit more research on, and we mentioned it a little bit in our last show, was solar generators. And of course, if it's a bad storm, you're not going to really have access to the sun, but you do ahead of time. And it's something that you can go ahead and store up that energy. And the solar generator actually is more like a battery that you can have inside your home, which I really like. It's not loud and stinky, and you can run it inside your house, which I really like. So that's another option to maybe look into.
Yeah, I remember our True Prep product of the week last week was the Jazz Pack, and it is a very impressive battery pack that has a continuous sine wave inverter, so you can run a lot of electronics off of it. Other than electrical generation, I mean, you're going to need, if you have a good generator, be it fossil fuel, battery, or something else, you can run some lighting, but you can't really cook off of a incandescent bulb.
What have you tried?
Well, I know that they get quite warm, but you could, I guess, maybe wrap some bacon around it and get a little bit going. I would hope that we would have a little more efficient means of cooking than that. And one of the things that I found interesting is that they make these new, well, it's not really new, but it's an old design. It's a candle that burns very hot. Mm-hmm. And by having it burn so hot, you can use the candle to boil water or to heat things up. Then they also make candles that are slow burn, and they burn a lot colder, but they burn for 36 hours at a time. And so by having a collection of these fast burning and slow burning candles, you can, you know, stagger your ability to not only warm up a very small area, which may or may not be important, but also to cook and to have a secondary source of light. Of course, having an open flame is its own problems, because now you've got, you know, emissions, you've got some kind of smoke coming into your enclosed area. You also have the danger fire hazard if the, you know, something were to get knocked over, or if there was some kind of storm surge that caused you to have wind coming into the building and maybe knock over your fire source.
Yes, and that's one of the things when we're kind of playing these scenarios out, and kind of, because that's the thing, Doug, I've never actually been through one of these superstorms. And now granted, I've been through snowstorms or things like that where I haven't had electricity for a couple of days, but I've never personally been through, you know, a very large superstorm. But playing it out, just kind of the what ifs, I mean, you know, we're talking about open flames in the house, so that then we're thinking, well, you know, maybe a fire extinguisher would be a great idea. Carbon monoxide detector would be an excellent idea,
particularly if you're talking about burning any kind of a fossil fuel in the house for a generator. You're going to have strong emissions from that. And even if you're thinking about like a propane heater, those propane heaters, every year you hear about people who have died from carbon monoxide poisoning because they put out so much CO into the enclosed space that it pushes the oxygen out, and then you can't breathe. And that having a detector would give you an advanced warning that you're doing something wrong.
Right. And these sort of things really need to be fully ventilated. So if you're bringing anything in the home that you're burning, you know, for light or heat source or something like that, it's just so important to have it fully ventilated. And I was actually on the American Lung Association's website, lung.org, and they were saying that after an emergency, that it's very common that people, they are poisoned by the carbon monoxide. And it makes sense. You know, if you don't have electricity or anything, then people are, you know, lighting things and poisoning themselves in their homes.
Well, it comes back to skill sets. And as we've been discussing before, you know, whether it's medical or anything else, if you don't know what you're doing, you can get yourself into an awful lot of trouble. And there are too many people who think that all they have to do is go out and buy a generator. They never use it. They never read the instruction manual. They never even think about it. Suddenly the power's out. And they're like, oh, yeah, I bought a generator a couple years ago. Let's go drag that in here. And next thing you know, they're poisoning themselves with the emissions because they have no idea how to use it.
Right. Yeah, there's certain things that are okay to learn by your mistakes, and that's just not a good one, you know, to learn
it's
the hard way.
Kind of like, where do you want to cut corners? You never want to do it on water filtration or gas masks, because learning gets really hard really fast. One of my favorite expressions is that experience is the hardest teacher, because it gives the test first and the lessons after.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. Yeah, well, one of the things that we're really hoping that, you know, through this broadcast is just kind of looking at the history, looking at our possible futures, and kind of playing out some different scenarios. You know, our hope for our listeners is definitely to, you know, not wait till the last minute, not to wait till the news, you know, comes on with a warning, but we want to jump ahead. We want to be ahead of the game here, and we want to go ahead and look at possible, you know, bringing in some lanterns or some candles, or, you know, looking at water purification, because if you turn on that tap and no water is coming out, you need a source, and you need a way to purify it.
Well, not only if no water is coming out, but if it's water is coming out, you still could be contaminated.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, if they're on a boil advisory.
And then what are you going to be doing? I mean, are you going to have a weather radio so that you know about that boil advisory? Are you going to be prepared enough to realize that even though the water's coming out is clean, that it's now full of, you know, basically feces that you have to filter out in order to prevent yourself from becoming critically ill at a time when there is very little medical help available too. You know, the time that you're going to have the most contamination is the time when you're least able to get help for it.
Yep, that's so true. That is so true. And also your food storage is something else to kind of look at. And it's just amazing to me, Doug, how many people just don't have much food in their homes. And they just kind of go out every day, just kind of pick up a little bit here and there. And,
well, really, it's not that shocking if you think about human nature. I mean, we are hunters and gatherers. We have this need to go out and get fresh all the time. And so when you start to stockpile things, people forget about it, they don't think about it, and they want that primordial thrill of going out and getting new food every day. So I understand that people like to do that. The problem is that when suddenly your foraging source is cut off, you've got nothing. And that's why we evolved beyond that to start to farm, so that you can have food all the time, have a steady supply. And people need to overcome that base reality where they think, oh, I can always go out and forage a little bit and have fresh, and it'll always be perfect, because always is not always going to be there.
That's true. That is true. And I mean, I think just having a well-stocked pantry, just going out and my favorite thing is to go to Sam's Club and stock up on canned foods. And I just rotate it in and out. And I know our friends at True Prep, they've got some excellent ways of putting up food for a long period of time. But for we're looking at storms, I know a lot of our listeners are thinking sort of, you know, maybe like a week or two. How long do you think, Doug, if to get prepared for a situation that we've been talking about today, about how many days worth of food do you think we should stock up with?
Well, you know, it's a very detailed question. I think that at a minimum, you should have at least 2 weeks worth of food. I think the more realistic measure is about a month. We're coming up on a commercial break, so let's revisit this after the break. We'd like to thank our sponsors over at True Prep and everybody at News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back to Ready Radio. You're listening to Doug and Amy right now. We are talking about how long should you prepare in the aftermath of a hurricane. it's a kind of involved question, because there are different, let's say, zones of preparedness. First, you have the initial storm, and that storm may roll through, and the storm itself may only last a few hours. It may last a whole day or a little more, but it may only last a few hours. And if you're thinking, well, as soon as this is over, as soon as the sky clears, not the eye, but really clears, then it's over, I think that you're woefully unprepared, because there's an awful lot of collateral damage and consequences that come after a storm like this. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes. So the first couple hours, you're basically just holding on tight, and you're under mattresses down in the basement, and it's kind of weathering the storm. And hopefully, our hope is that our listeners have prepared ahead of time, just knowing that that storm is on its way. And you mentioned how long we need to prepare. So after the initial bunkering down and sort of when you, almost like the Wizard of Oz, when you kind of look around and, where am I? Toto. So then after that, so we sort of have the realization that there's no grocery store, or maybe there's a tree over my car, or something along those lines.
Or there are trees with the power lines all down, mm-hmm. that there's standing fetid water everywhere, that you now have catfish in your front yard, that your animals no longer have food. I mean, there's lots of
scenarios.
Scenarios mm-hmm. that come into play here, and that's going to take a long time to clean up. Look how long it took to get New Orleans normalized after Katrina hit. Look how long it took to get the subways pumped out in New York. I mean, these are things that didn't happen overnight, and the cleanup is part of being prepared so that you are able to be out there and doing. Now, sure, you could have, you know, a few cans of green beans and cans of corn, and maybe you've got 700 or 800 calories a day, and you can scrimp by, but are you going to be able to go out on those 700 or 800 calories a day and do more work than you've probably ever done in your life in cleanup?
Yes, that is a good point, because so many of us are used to, after a long day of work behind the desk and you know, pushing the pencil across the, you know, across your papers, that you know, we come home after an exhausting day of that to, you know, flipping channels on the TV. So,
well, then and you know, one of my coworkers today showed me a bag of lettuce that he was going to have. He proudly proclaimed it lunch, and I looked at it and I said, "That's not lunch. That's what lunch eats." But
no, you're right. And then so basically, what we're looking at is our caloric need. If we are out there moving our bodies and chopping wood, or if we are trying to, do some repair, those are a lot of the things that a lot of us, you know, are not, you know, typically used to.
And, we try to cut calories and cut corners. We want a low-sodium diet. When you're out there without any air conditioning, working in the hot sun after a tropical storm rolls through, and you're cutting up trees and you're moving things and you're sweating, you need more salt. You're going to find a lot of the prepackaged foods have a high salt mm-hmm. content. The reason is because you need sodium. And here's a prep that most people don't think about: powdered Gatorade.
Mm-hmm.
Powdered
mm-hmm.
Gatorade will not only make your bottled water that's been sitting around for 7 or 8 months tastes like it's drinkable, but it's also going to give you the electrolytes you need to be able to carry on after a disaster like this.
Yes, and I know that some of the water filtration are the... now, have you ever tried the purification tablets? I will not bring myself to try it, because I've just heard they are nasty.
They are nasty.
And then, but if you put some Gatorade, a little flavor on top of it.
In fact, the old MREs used to have Gatorade packs along with the Chlorflox. So mm-hmm. you could knock the stuff out and it'd sink to the bottom. You'd have enough chlorine in it so it tastes like pool water to kill the bacteria so that you don't get dysentery. And then you throw some Gatorade on top of that for a really interesting cocktail.
Yeah, that sounds yummy. Sign me up.
Definitely. Which is why we come back to having good filtration rather than just, you know.
Yes, and why vodka is a good prep, maybe. Maybe not.
Maybe not. But as we, are trying to figure out what our needs are, there are going to be a lot more needs for higher calories. We're going to need a lot more minerals when we're working out after one of these events than we are normally. You know, we try to cut calories, we try to cut out salt. That shouldn't be a concern if you're going to be out there moving around, working hard, and probably working in ways that you haven't in years.
Yeah, basically goes into reverse. I mean, now all of a sudden, instead of looking for your low calorie, foods, we're looking for high calorie now, and we're looking to, to give our bodies fuel and energy to keep us moving, and as long as it takes to get through whatever it is that, that we might have to get through.
Calories, both not only carbohydrates, but also fats. So they have long burning calories so that you're able to keep your body functioning at peak efficiency.
Yes, and that's an excellent point, too, because, you know, not all foods are created the same. And so really you do want your carbohydrates for your energy. I mean, you want your protein, you know, of course, but just like normally, you really do want a well-balanced diet, but you do want to make sure you get those carbs for your energy, too.
Yes. Yep. And that's one of the things that we've really cut out of our society. We don't really bake bread anymore. We don't look at carbs as being our friends because carbs create energy, energy that we're not using. But in a disaster, in an emergency situation, your friends are going to be your carbs.
Yeah.
And I think that that shows a lot about where we're going with our preps. You got to think about it, this is in broader terms than just the way you would normally live your daily life. But I know all of our listeners today are listening to the radio, and I think that the radio is going to be a very important part after any disaster, whether it be a hurricane or tornado, an ice storm, or anything, and being able to be aware of not only what's going on in AM and FM, but getting weather broadcasts from NOAA is very important, too. And I think that this is a good time to talk about our True Prep Product of the Week.
That's right. Product of the Week. Da-da-da! So our Product of the Week is the Eaton FRX2 Radio. Basically, it's a solar and or hand crank AM, FM, and weather radio. And this little thing has a USB USB smartphone charger, which is pretty nifty.
So I can take my smartphone, plug it right into this thing, and start cranking and generate enough power to charge up the phone.
Yes.
And yes. Not only you said that it has a solar panel on it, too. So as soon as we have sunlight again, we can set the thing outdoors and let it start to charge on its own. So I don't have to sit there and crank it all day, every day.
That's right. So while you are working, you know, on getting that tree off of your car, you could have that baby off to the side just kind of charging up. But yes, that's the thing. I mean, we're talking about bad weather, and in bad weather, you don't typically have the nice, pretty sunny days. So if you are, let's say that it has charged all day and you're at home at night and you're listening to the radio and the thing goes out, well, it's got that handy little crank on the back. So if it's in the evening or if you don't have any sunlight outside, you could just crank that thing up.
Or if the kids are just really, really wild and you got to give them something to do, here,
right.
Crank this thing up and then we can listen to the radio again.
Kids need jobs too. Yeah, kids, that'd be a good one for them.
Kids do need jobs. And I'm being a little facetious here because I'm anticipating that the kids are going to have to be occupied somehow. But that's something that we skip over a lot. And the radio, you know, you can pick up FM stations from a fair good distance away, and the NOAA weather stations, if there was a real continental disaster, those stations are going to be the first things that come back up. They may not be broadcasting weather information anymore. They may be broadcasting information about the disaster or what's going on in the world, but I anticipate those frequencies being the first reactivated after something major happening that would be nationwide.
Yeah, we have this inborn need to know what's going on. And, you know, there's nothing like just feeling cut off from the world.
I was reading a story this last week that said that we have gone to the point where we are information addicts. And that following an emergency, people now take even more extreme risks than their ancestors would in search of information. Because the withdrawals from being able to have instant information all the time leads people to take unnecessary risks.
That's a good point. I never really thought about that. Yeah, I can definitely see my husband for sure in that situation. He would be so antsy. He would just head out to go see what he could find.
But until we get to the point where you have to go foraging for your information, you can always check us out on Facebook or Twitter. We have accounts on both sites, Ready Radio Net, and you can get instant feeds. We have as much information as we can pump through there. We retweet things that are of interest to our listeners. We have new contests and promotions. I know that we were giving away a product this last week, a small survival tool to anyone who came up with the best suggestion for a radio show. And so please do check us out there, get your information, and stay in touch.
Yeah, and you know what? Also, Doug, I was going to say that our item of the week, the Eaton Radio, if that's something our listeners want to check out and have a look at, just go to trueprep.com, and these babies run about $39.99. It's, very reasonable, I think, for what it is, and that way they can get a visual of what that is. And the one thing that I like about it, Doug, also, I didn't mention, was the size. It's fairly small, which I really like because I can put that baby in my bag if I'm heading out somewhere, and it's very lightweight and small, and I can, you know, take it around with me very easily.
Definitely something you'd want to look at TruePrep.com, and that's spelled TRUPREP.com. Not, there's only one E in TruePrep.
That's right. Yeah, sometimes people get a little confused on that. So that was, good job bringing that up for sure.
As we're wrapping up today, folks, we just would like to reiterate that our thoughts and prayers do go out to everyone affected from last week's typhoon. It's really a tragedy, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy here. We can learn from our mistakes. We can have better early warning, and we can be better prepared in our daily lives to be able to avoid having these sorts of things impact us to that degree. Remember, we're here every Thursday at noon. We appreciate your time listening to us. We'd like to thank our sponsors over at True Prep. We'd like to thank everyone at News Talk 1160, the talk of the town, and we will see you all next week.
You've been listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by True Prep. For all your prepping needs, visit True Prep online at truprep.com or visit a True Prep store in Roswell or Marietta. Tune in each week as Doug and Amy get you ready for anything that comes your way. Ready Radio, Thursdays at noon, only on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.